government, music, art, health, science, theology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this February the 5th on the West Coast, now February the 6th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome everyone listening to our broadcast this evening on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, especially those in the U.S. military, and also the folks listening on blogtalkradio.com. Before we bring on tonight's guest, I want to allude to a story that we covered, and of course the associated technologies that are being planned for the world. We reviewed this on Evident Footprints here this past Monday with our regular Monday night guest, Dr. A. True Watt. He brought it to our attention that there is an NSA facility being constructed in the state of Utah. And they're basically incorporating techniques and knowledge that sprung out of the SRI remote viewing program and other, let's say, abnormal parapsychological experimentation. That program was both developed under INSCOM and the NSA. And the SciTech founder, Ed Dames, was part of that project. We had some Scientologists who were also involved, Hal Puthoff, Ingo Swann. And at some point, the government claimed that they had abandoned the program and that they were no longer involved in that. Yeah, right. I guess we can take that to the bank and cash that along with our Federal Reserve notes, too. And there is a new plan now to get into what is called remote neural monitoring. And actually, these technologies work two ways, much like radio or television signals and microwave signals and other communications devices. They don't just work in one direction, and they can reverse the technology and plant a thought in your head or read your thoughts. And the long-term ultimate goal is basically to stop terrorism and crime by reading everyone's thoughts. And there was a movie Tom Cruise was in not too long ago, I think it was called The Bourne Identity, where they were predicting crimes before they were committed, having psychics read screens that were basically monitoring all the people. I don't know if it was all over the country, I don't recall, or it was just in one city, but it was just the thought of it is bone-chilling. And, of course, this is going to be using nanotechnologies, and so the ability to create different frequencies, and that is something to be concerned about. We have enough frequencies happening already. Now, let's jump forward a little bit, or maybe backward, might be a more appropriate word. In looking at the music industry, it's evident that all the different types of pop music are incorporating elements of technology, and I don't mean synthesizers and special effects, outboard gear, or plugins in computer programs that are used to simulate reverberation or digital delays or filtering and compression and expansion, limiting, those types of things. Those of you that are in the field of audio engineering know what I'm talking about, and I'm not trying to talk down to the listeners, just to let you know that there are different ways that you can modify sound. You can sort of paint it with a different texture, different color. so to speak. And as a result of that, there are many, many interesting discoveries made with music when it's used in the proper manner, let's say adhering to universal principles. And when you take that those elements and then, let's say, taint them or infect them with visual images that really serve as nothing more than Kabbalistic symbology intended to slowly brainwash people into thinking that they have to accept making the sign of Satan, or that they have to accept innumerable other symbols. Pyramids is a big one. And this new trend that's been going on for some time now of women, especially, wearing robotic costumes, and then having dancers act like robots. We're entering a period of time where it's quite apparent that they're trying to bridge the gap between what is organic and what is inorganic. In other words, the human species is being turned into a machine, and the machines are trying to they're trying to make the machines act like humans, so that they can merge these two technologies. And wouldn't you know, opposite of creation, do it backwards of what it should be. And there you have where mankind is headed. And they're using the music industry to really influence people. There's a great website. One of our listeners, Allison in Ohio, sent a link to this website. It's called theindustryexposed.com. And I encourage you to go there and spend some time and look at this, because they took an idea from a 1927 movie called Metropolis. It's about this mad scientist that wore one glove, basically turned a woman into a robot, created this living robot that was of a female persuasion. And it appeared to be a silent movie, at least from the context of how it's presented on this website I just referred to. But they do a detailed study showing all the different clips of that 1927 movie that they have revived and incorporated into the live concerts of people like Madonna, Britney Spears, Beyonce, Jay-Z, Kanye West, and on and on. Many of the rap and hip-hop and what they're now calling R&B or pop venues are using these technologies in their videos, in their live concerts, including inverted pyramids, all kinds of satanic symbols. And the kids have no idea what they're chanting to or what they're screaming about. They're caught up in this chaotic sort of a firestorm of unbridled emotion. And we need to be concerned about these things, because this is also found in videotapes, iPods, cell phones, PDAs, the handheld computer devices, and a myriad of other products that you're probably using that I'm not even aware of. And we're going to allow tonight's guest to give us a presentation on that. We're going to get into a discussion on what this means to humanity. Our guest tonight, our usual Friday night guest, is my co-host and our resident science advisor for Evident Footprints. He's been with me since I started the show. He's a scientist, inventor, author, lecturer, and teacher, my good friend Jim Murray. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Don. It's good to be with you.
Well, I hope I didn't eat up all the time sort of setting up tonight's show. But I felt that some of that needed to be mentioned. And
no, I don't think you did any harm to my intended presentation. But what I'm going to do is the same thing you just did. Essentially, I'm going to blaze through a bunch of background information to lay the groundwork for, you know, the actual subject matter that we want to discuss. And if I do that intelligently, we should have plenty of time left to volley it back and forth after the introduction of some foundational material.
Okay. Well, you be my guest and take off. I'm all ears.
All right. Now, this is going to start off with some information which may seem to be completely tangential to the subject you introduced, but please bear with me. There is method to my madness. First thing I want to talk about here quickly is a problem which may not be well known to too many people, but it's referred to as the wild boar situation. And this is referring to the actual animals, the razorbacks, the big wild tuskers that roam around various parts of our country. They were introduced, believe it or not, originally from Europe by Christopher Columbus. So that's, you know, at least that's what the historians say. And they were originally made indigenous to Florida. The habits of these animals are that they're very prolific, and they can mate up to 3 times a year, females producing litters of anywhere from 6 to 8 piglets. So that's a lot of reproduction in 1 year. These boars are now found in over 40 of our states, and their population is estimated to be above 30 million. They are very large animals and very ferocious, and their size seems to be increasing along with their population. Now, they have also been known to kill and eat human beings. Now, I'm just introducing these facts because they're pivotal to what I'm leading up to. Now, the second situation that's worth reporting upon is the domestic pig situation. Our domesticated pigs have been around for hundreds or perhaps even thousands of years. Everybody knows about the fact that they're used for food. But the interesting thing is, if one of these domestic pigs escapes and joins a herd of these boars, within 6 to 8 months, it will physically change. It will grow huge tusks just like the other wild boars. And it will also wind up being covered with coarse hair. Just bear those things in mind. The next situation is that of the elephants. Now, elephants, of course, are in great danger of extinction in the modern world. And they've been hunted for their ivory for hundreds of years. Recent reports, however, seem to indicate that many baby elephants are now being born without tusks. The next situation I want to report on is called the 100th monkey phenomenon. There was a doctor back in the 1940s by the name of Dr. Lyndall Watson who wrote a book called Lifetide. And in that book, he discusses this phenomenon of the 100th monkey. And apparently what it makes reference to is the fact that within a given species, there is a particular critical mass, and when that mass is reached in terms of some new experience or new information, all of a sudden, quite magically, you might say, that information is immediately made available to the entire species group. And in the case that he's reporting, he was observing a troop of macaque monkeys in northern Japan, and the situation they were involved with was that several of them were taught to wash sweet potatoes in the ocean before eating them. And the monkeys taught other fellow monkeys to do this this cleaning of their food prior to consumption. And when this certain critical mass was reached, what happened, of course, was that monkeys completely isolated from the troop that was being investigated. As a matter of fact, some of them were on the northern out islands of Japan, had no physical contact whatsoever with the group under observation, and they began the same process of washing their food in the ocean before eating it. Now, that particular process is a spiritual one. Just bear that in mind. To tie all this together now, I want to just reiterate something we talked about on a previous show, Don, and that is a book recently written by Jack Horner, the famous paleontologist, in which he talks about building a dinosaur. And what this information comprises of is, in effect, proof of the fact that that birds have descended from dinosaurs. And according to Jack Horner, there are genetic switches in the DNA structure which can be turned off and turned on by various flags or tags, as they call them, which are chemical compounds of various types. And essentially what he's saying is that assuming that birds have descended from dinosaurs, in the case of the chicken, which is the one that he was investigating, the original animal from which this chicken descended may have been, you know, some very large prehistoric beast. The blueprint for that beast is still in the DNA of the chicken. The interesting thing is that these genetic switches have certain things turned off so that you don't get the original, you get whatever it has de-evolved to. And what they've been doing is finding out that with these chemical tags injected into the embryo, in the egg, as it's developing, that they can release segments of those genetic codes from eons past. And now they've been able to make chickens that have long reptilian tails. They've made chickens that have beaks with teeth in them. They've made chickens that have little tiny forearms instead of wings, and also chickens that have a very reptilian skin instead of feathers. Now, they haven't been able to figure out how to make all that happen at the same time. They've only been able to introduce these properties in a singular fashion. But the point is that it seems to indicate that the genetic pattern for the original design is carried forward in time, even if evolutionary forces change the design of the final product. And so under certain conditions, these genetic switches can be activated and the process can be reversed. How much it can be reversed remains to be seen. Now, the reason for all of this preamble is I want to call attention to the next subject, which pertains to us. What exactly are we humans? Now, I know that all of the traditional information suggests that we descended from ape-like creatures, and maybe in some ways we have. Our bodies have certainly changed, you know, a great deal over the millennia. But the interesting thing is that there is a pronounced spiritual difference in human beings that separates them from animals, at least in some human beings, that separates them from animals. And the thing that's worthy of consideration here is, if mankind should turn out to be either a hybrid or a specially created being that had his original design taken from a higher consciousness form, and depending on your belief structure, whether it's angels or aliens or mystical beings of some sort, makes no difference. The fact of the matter is, it must have come from somewhere. And the thing that's interesting is that we need to look at the evidence that I just presented concerning the pigs and the elephants and the monkeys, etc., and realize that what the message is here apparently, is that nature has provided a mechanism, whether we understand it fully or not, that essentially says that what a particular species needs to acquire in its present form for the sake of perpetuation of the species as a whole is apparently given somehow by a feedback process from either a spiritual or non-physical medium of some sort that has a coupling to the DNA and to these genetic switches. And so I can't imagine that we, as human beings, don't possess the same mechanism. And my research over the years suggests that we humans would have the tendency, under proper conditions in our environment, where we would open our own genetic switches and change our own form or our own manifestation in such a way as to heighten our senses, our consciousness, and our spirituality if we were allowed to do that. Now, the point is that just like things happening in the environment affects elephants who decide not to grow tusks because they're tired of being hunted, or monkeys who discover that they have benefits of washing their food before eating them, and then that spreads to the rest of the monkey population, or the thing with the domestic pigs changing to be more in step with the herd that adopts them. These mechanisms are fascinating, and even though we don't know how they work, we should be aware that we can do this too. However, obviously, technology and the structure of the world in which we live can also be brought to bear to curtail us from doing that. And one of the things that you mentioned, Don, which is this tendency now towards a merger of man and machine, should not be surprising, because the further we can be driven from our spirituality and our normal nature, the less tendency there would be for any of these genetic switches to be thrown and for us to start to find our true heritage. And the thing that hit me when we first discussed this this situation is the fact that this tendency of the man-machine link seems to be well encapsulated in the character of Darth Vader. And if you can take that individual, who I'm sure everybody is familiar with, and just imagine an entire world populated with people like that, you're talking about a totally dead society when it comes to any form of spirituality. And this is being accomplished by perpetuating the illusion that we have no more needs and no more high, lofty spiritual goals or cultural goals to aspire to. And I believe that this false front of fabricated security essentially keeps our genetic switches from functioning. And we are literally trained to believe that there's nothing more that can be done or accomplished, and we are totally dependent upon our keepers. And if that were true, we are essentially less in touch with our own reality than the domesticated pig. So with that, I can definitely say that there's a lot left to discuss, but I think I laid enough groundwork for you to get the idea where my thoughts are going with this. There is apparently a mechanism in nature that's in full swing in other species, even as we speak, and very, very few individuals in humankind seem to be able to avail themselves of this apparatus. And I believe that this is being done deliberately.
Oh, there's no question about it. Building a 1 million square foot facility, and that's what's advertised. Who knows? It could be how many floors underground do you think there would be that the people would never see? First of all, I want to compliment the work you did in putting that introduction together in the form of a lecture. Actually, you brought out a lot of interesting facts, and I'm sure you would still be doing that if you wanted to add more examples. What comes to mind? I'd like to comment on what you said about the DNA. Metaphysics teaches that we are beings that were created originally with a 12-stranded DNA, sort of a serpentine type of DNA where the strands interweave with each other. And basically, we're operating on two. Now, when you, if you recall the O.J. hearing, O.J. Simpson hearing, his murder trial, where they introduced DNA evidence, and they were giving this long, elaborate example of what the odds of that being O.J. Simpson's blood were, according to the statistics of how everyone's DNA is different, and they talked about these two strands. And they referred to the remaining 10 strands, which show up on a piece of paper as if they know what they're talking about or they're telling us the truth, and that it's junk DNA. Now, why put the junk there in the first place? It makes no sense. Would it have been switched off as you referred? Yes. Or has it been intentionally switched off through all the toxicity that we have endured for thousands of years on this planet? Yes. Is that changing, like the pigs and the elephants? Yes. It's changing to where those 10 strands which have been intentionally disassembled, whether it's happened as a defense mechanism because of the pollution and toxicity and we could get into the metaphysics of what the corruption does. You gave an example on a show a couple of months ago where you were talking about how plants react to an individual that came in and basically lacerated and murdered another plant. I'm sure you recall that conversation.
Absolutely.
And, yes, and when that individual walked in the room at a different time, the plant recognized that individual. It sensed its energy field. It sensed its vibration. Now, if we're so foolish to believe that these things are not just or are only going to be targeted against human beings, we're fools. It's going to be targeted against all living things on this planet and the planet itself. This is another super collider. This is another HARP array. It's sadistic and it has to be stopped. It really does. What I'd like you to expound upon a little bit, and I don't, you know, you can comment on what I just said. This is all interfering with this what you call the natural grid or the universal grid out there of how the creation was, how it was designed to be sort of a self-sustaining mechanism, and that if the beings, the living beings that were living within that grid were required for whatever reason to adapt to changing climates and changing situations that are not necessarily seen, but certainly felt and certainly understood on another level. As you said, it's spiritual in nature. Then what is the impact of doing this to this planet or to the people going to have to the rest of the universe?
Well, that's a heck of a mouthful right there. But I would like to start by going back to your opening comment, because I actually have that in my notes. I just didn't get to it yet. the experiments of Clave Baxter with the plants. The mere fact that we already know a plant doesn't have a nervous system the way a human being does, and yet it's capable of recognition, it's capable of emotions, you know, which is an astounding thing if you stop and think of it. But what's really the major point of this focus is the fact that the plant is expressing itself electromagnetically. And this fact is borne out by the researches of this fellow Clave Baxter, because he was actually a polygraph operator for the police department in New York, or one of those agencies. And somehow he got the idea by reading some experiment about brine shrimp or something, that he could connect a polygraph to a plant and make it register something. And, of course, that was the beginning of this whole line of research. But the point is that the fact that he achieved this and, in a sense, verifies that there's an electromagnetic coupling automatically tells us, along with a whole host of other interesting experiments done by other people, which I can relate if we have time, seem to suggest very strongly that interference in the proper manner with these normal electromagnetic couplings that apparently exist all over the place definitely upset the intended design for the holistic nature of the planet. Now, one thing I can tell you that's really fascinating, and I don't know if there are people out there who are aware of this or not, but about 12 years ago, I got involved with a particular individual. I won't mention his name. And he had quite a few interesting connections. One of them had a product that essentially was a recording of the concerto, if you want to use that word, that is sustained in a healthy forest environment where you have birds chirping and animals moving around, the wind blowing, insects making noises, and all of the rest of that. And he found that when you play that sound back into a confined environment like a greenhouse, for instance, that all the plants in that whole greenhouse will open their pores, and an air-supported form of fertilizer can then be sprayed into the air, and the result will be that they have enormous growth potential and very, very healthy results from doing this, as opposed to using the traditional factory-prepared nitrates in the soil. So here again, we get the idea that there is a spiritual world, a second octave of existence above the physical, which is just as interlinked as the complexities of a rainforest, but on another level. And that's the thing, that's the environment that these maniacs are tampering with now. Because by disturbing the tranquility of that arrangement on this higher level of frequencies, as you call it, they can set up wave patterns, distortion, interference, nullification, and also they can inject their own information, which of course is the worst of the whole possibility, to affect the entire grid of reality. And, you know, you talk about blasphemy. This is the ultimate arrogance, that man thinks he has reached the point where he can play God and tamper with the foundations of our planet and the universe. And this is the ultimate sin. And for doing that, there will be ramifications. I can tell you that unequivocally. And I just hope it stops before it goes too far, because it's madness.
Yeah. I might add just a little caveat to that. Not that it was deficient in any manner, other than that the whole creation, as I understand it, and I believe I understand as much as the next guy will say, okay? I have a right to say that, and so I'll exercise that. Maybe there's someone out there that can give us all the answers, but where are they? Why aren't they speaking? Why aren't they revealing that truth? So in my own truth, and I happen to know it's the truth of many others, is that this universe was created out of love, out of pure love. And at some point, some aspect of that love, in its desire to individuate itself so it could expand through experience, and that's why we have living creatures, especially of the spiritual kind, that the whole of creation, which is in its purest sense love, can expand and be even a greater love. Well, what you're describing is the opposite of that. What we're both describing, really, when we're talking about these sadistic Frankenstein technologies being applied to all the various life forms in every aspect, found naturally in nature or put here by the Creator himself. And in violating that, or in creating dichotomies to that, we have to be affecting the whole. Maybe it's their desire to actually, or maybe some aspect of their psychopathy actually causes them to believe that they can tip the balance totally in their favor and make this a whole evil creation, if you get my meaning. But that I don't see that succeeding. They underestimate the power of God, the power of the Creator, and they overestimate their own abilities. They can only do what they do through corruption, through lying, and through murder, through destruction. They only know how to destroy. Now they build buildings, but they're just as happy and gleeful to destroy them and to destroy the life contained therein. And I just wanted to make that statement that it's blatantly evident that they're violating universal principles, and they know it. And they create these illusions to fool us, and they believe in them so much, although they see themselves above us, that they are the authors of the fear. They're the source of the fear. They feed the fear. They are the fear, you see? And all the other negative attributes that go along with that distorted mindset. It's not a consciousness. To me, it's a lack of consciousness. It's a total lack. But they have a method, and the beings that they do this with, or the beings under whose control they are of that very same nature. They cannot fathom the importance of impacting another aspect of life elsewhere in the universe. Egocentric is a good description for what type of beings they are. And they are illusory, even in their own self-identification. They are illusions, and they don't realize it. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I certainly agree with what you're saying. I would just like to clarify one issue. I think that that there is a need for a certain amount of pre-programming, for lack of a better term, which is one of the reasons why you see people totally decoupled from their surroundings, playing with their iPods and sending text messages and God only knows what all these other things are that they do. That very act of concentrating on a non-essential, non-life positive entity for so many hours. And some of people do this constantly. I mean, you see them with earphones on, they're listening to that stuff all day long, or else they're on the internet, which they now have with the little BlackBerry contraptions. They're texting, they're, I don't know what all they do, but anyhow, the point is that by being that preoccupied with all this stuff, sets you up after so many months or years of this type of activity, to be completely receptive to the type of interference that they're planning, to expose us to with this new installation. Now, the interesting thing is, if you go in the opposite direction, what you find are people who can become so integrated with their surroundings and with the natural law that they become receivers of the higher information. And this manifests itself in any number of ways. You've got composers, you've got great writers, you've got wonderful painters, you've got inventors, you've got teachers. The list is endless. That there were people that can plug in to the universal source and download directly through their spiritual channels much more exciting and much more worthwhile information than the garbage that people are so preoccupied with today. But here's the alarming thing. Now, my dad, and you would have gotten along very well, Don, because he was a great student of music. He loved the classics, and he could play a piano almost like a virtuoso. And as a result of that, when we were growing up, we were exposed to a lot of classical music. We had literally a little concert every Saturday where he would play various pieces for us from his record collection and then explain what we had listened to. And one of the things I noticed, you know, you're talking about Beethoven, Brahms, Liszt, Haydn, all these wonderful guys. And I said to him as a kid, I said, well, where are today's composers? And then as I grew older and started studying physics, I noticed the same thing. Where are the Teslas? You know, where are the James Watts? Where are all the wonderful guys that gave us what we have today? You don't find that happening very much anymore. Everything now is cranked out by institutions that spend millions and millions of dollars in essentially a factory-type environment. And I'll bet you that you can go through any number of various careers and find the same decline. The more intense society becomes in the pursuit of these modern technologies, the more the gifted individual disappears. And that tells you right there very specifically what's going on. This entire phony world, this illusionary place that we live in, is designed to decouple us from the source. And once that decoupling has been accomplished, along come these brilliant masters with their technology and their negative influences, and they say, don't worry, we've got a replacement. We will be beaming to you our own desires. And I'm sure that this is a reality. This is not my imagination. There's too many other people that are well aware of this tragic decline in creativity and spirituality, and the fact that it's related to the way in which the world has been designed in modern times, and the fact that we are forced to live this way. So the fact that you bring out this interesting tidbit about the new facility in Utah is certainly not a surprise to me, and I definitely believe that it should be stopped and that it's a very negative endeavor on their behalf.
Oh, no doubt about it. And I'm glad that you see it that way, because I know others. Dr. A. Truat has said the exact same thing this past Monday on this show. And on many other shows, on his own show, he was on Drew Raine's Marines Disquisition, had a two-hour talk on this, the impact. And I'm trying to expand, you know, the awareness of this. We tend to think, you know, if I have an iPhone or any cell phone, it's mine. I use it. You know, we're of that mentality. Me, 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 me. We don't think about what impact it has on others in our proximity, let alone to anything else. We know nothing about it. We don't even know why they created it as a society. We see it as a convenience, or we see it as entertainment, or maybe even a useful tool. But they certainly could make these things that would not emanate electromagnetic frequencies like they do, in the manner in which they do, that they become harmful to the health of a human being. They care not about our health. And when you look at the fact that we came out of the Industrial Revolution, and they said this is, now we're entering the period of the service revolution. Well, service to whom? Well, we were serving the corporations, and that didn't last 15, 20 years. And then we're in the age of information. This is the age of information technology, or the corporation. And these corporations are dead. There's actually a legal, or I should say a parallel in law. I prefer to use that, because they've created a legal fiction. And there are laws, and laws are universal in nature. That's how the universe was created. There weren't legalisms in creation. There was law, and there is law, and there always will be law. And when we interfere with those laws, as the corporations have, because they have raped this planet, and they have robbed and plundered the people, and the governments that are now spoon-feeding them, our blood and our sweat and our tears, with the intention of just perpetuating them, they're dead. They're really dead. I don't know if you see it that way. Yeah, some of them are still in business, but they have no soul. They have no spirit. They certainly don't have a grasp of the universe and reality. Quest is for absolute power over other beings. For what purpose? To obliterate them? Because they're so short-sighted, they can't see past their greedy noses to see that those that they feed off of won't be around to provide them with the energy. Or are they going to set about invading other territories in the universe, as pirates would, as it's going on now? These are the same beings that do this in other realms, even in other dimensions to some extent. So that's my rant.
Yeah, well, I understand that they're dead. I mean, that's pretty obvious. As a matter of fact, the interesting thing is Wilhelm Reich made a great deal of commotion about that very issue. You know, people say there are no vampires, there are no zombies. Actually, there's thousands of them. And the undead, or the living dead, are these people. And the interesting thing is, if you study Reich's work and you understand the healthy way in which a normal organic mechanism is supposed to respond, and then you contrast it with what we got now, the difference is like night and day. And the interesting thing is, even though Reich was accused because of misinterpretation of his work for perpetuating sexual freedoms back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. It wasn't really what he was doing at all. What he was trying to do was to show that the way human beings are designed, there is supposed to be a spiritual energy throughput that is constantly functioning. And when this is blocked, then that's where all the neurosis is and the disease and all the other stuff comes from. And during the time that he was investigating this very fundamental mechanism, it came to his attention the fact that the ability to love in a genuine way, and this includes all forms of love, is mutually exclusive with the desire for power. And you will find, and I will guarantee this, because it's been investigated by other people, not just me, that you take any individual that's in a high place of authority, and I guarantee you that he has a problem of some sort expressing genuine love. Because it can't be that the two things cannot coexist. I'm not talking about somebody who's the captain of a corporation. I'm talking about somebody who is a megalomaniac that's only interested in the conquering and the subjugation of other people. That's the kind of power I'm talking about, the ultimate power, the power where you can, you know, mumble anything and have it done immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who aspires towards a position like that has already got a problem. And that's one of the basic things that's wrong with our society, is that we don't realize that the very people that aspire for power and are given the same by us are all automatically the wrong types. They shouldn't be there. But until we learn these lessons, it's just going to continue on as it is.
Yeah. Imagine with, you know, I said this on a show either last week or 2 weeks ago. Imagine just being outside watching all this happen from a perspective where you've transcended this level of consciousness. And you know much more about the realities of the universe and the realities of life in all its various forms. It's endless forms, really, because it's an ever-changing collection of possibilities. I don't know if collection is the right word, but you get my meaning.
Absolutely.
And watching what's going on this planet. And that there are so few on this planet. I'm not saying there aren't people on the planet who are aware of these things or aren't attempting to change these things or affect some sort of positive influence on them. But that is the desire or the endless need to stifle that from occurring, just to prevent that from occurring, is insane. And they see all the positive benefits that this planet offers, its beauty, its nature, its diversity, and the things that it's willing to give up to sustain life on its surface. It's been treated like a whorehouse, you know? It has.
Worse.
I'm sure the higher civilizations that are watching what's going on here, not to mention God and other angelic beings that have an interest in watching what this place is doing, have to be pulling their hair out if they still have hair or if they need it. Or they have to be pulling their light out. How's that? to be witnessing this. Over and over, this endless loop of corruption. And really, you know, the corruption is just a reflection of the lack of consciousness and the lack of intelligence, basic common sense, even.
Well, the thing of it is, you've touched on, again, the primal mechanism that we should all be aware of. I mean, in a much more reduced manner, the pigs, the monkeys, and all the other things that I mentioned, they don't have any problem being plugged into their prime directive. You know, their obligation as living beings is to follow the law that created them. And they will do whatever they need to do to sustain themselves and their kind. And I'm sure that they have their own little experiences in each lifetime that mean something to the species that they represent. Well, we shouldn't look down on that. We should understand that we are doing the same thing on a higher octave. Our obligation is not only to perpetuate ourselves, but to become more than what we are, not less. And as you mentioned with these other DNA strands, only God knows what the potential is. If all of our genetic switches were thrown, what would we become? What possible type of being could we eventually be? Now, you know, we can get a glimmer of what that's like if you read some of the ancient writings and you believe that the early masters from places like Lemuria and Atlantis who had access to higher understanding of creation and embodied some of that in the science of alchemy, when they took these various alchemical extracts, or elixirs as I like to call them, they may very well have had all their switches opened, because they didn't change physically exactly, although if you read certain things, they did look different. They looked more radiant. They looked younger. They lived longer. All of those things are very nice. But the more important thing is that they all report the ability, without dying, to commune with beings on higher planes and receive information directly, which they perceived as instructions, being taught, being helped, you know, by masters, by other beings who are in a much more elevated plane. Just imagine if you had that to rely upon instead of the garbage that we're forced to assimilate every day from radio and television. I mean, it should be a natural choice. But you see, we're so dumbed down, not only intellectually, but spiritually as well, that we're not even aware that that choice exists. And that's the true tragedy.
Yeah. Well, I did, and you know this, I know you're not saying it's everyone, but we have a whole planet of beings called human beings, and many of them aren't being, are they?
No, they're not, because they're not allowed to be.
Yes.
And the interesting thing is, the people that are behind all this, they know all this. It's very obvious that they do. But they're denied that connection themselves by the choices that they've made, because they prefer to be masters. They prefer to be, you know, the power mongers of the world. And because they are denied it, they want to make sure you're denied it. And that's part of this whole vicious cycle, you know.
Yeah, I honestly think they're incapable of reaching those levels. And so they're hell-bent on pulling us down to their level. That's what this is about. You know, that's the only thing that makes sense out of what they do, is to consider that they have no hope.
You know, well, they're already in hell.
Yeah.
If you stop and, if you don't have to be dead to be in hell. you know, all you have to do is be spiritually and emotionally dead. And if you look at any of the main players in the world, and I don't have to mention any names, we all know who they are, you just look in those dead eyes, eyes like a toy doll or a shark or something that's lifeless and, you know, with that devoid of the joy that you see in something that's healthy and unscathed.
Divorce.
Take a little child, for instance, and compare the look in a beautiful young child's eyes with what you see when you look in the eyes of some of our great leaders. And on some level in your gut, you will definitely, unless you're dead also, you will definitely see the difference.
Yes, I'm inclined to agree. Well, Jim, again, another hour has flown by. We can certainly continue this discussion. We actually agreed to do that even before we started talking about it, because there's a lot to say, a lot to cover. But I would personally like to leave the listening audience with the thoughts about what I said at the top of the hour and all the things that you've talked about, because you're giving us a reason, for many reasons, found in nature. Nature doesn't need man to tell it what to do to be able to function, and that's what's messing up nature. That's what's messed up nature. And the way the universe is constructed, it can fix itself, and it will. Question is, would you like to be here when that occurs, or would you like to be held responsible for not doing so, for not contributing to the whole? Ultimately, we are all one when we go back to the Creator, and the Creator will decide what he will do with those that have destroyed the creation, or the aspects of the creation that they were able to affect and afflict. So think about that over the weekend, folks. Jim, any closing comments?
No, not really. I mean, I've kind of spoke my piece, but it would be worthwhile just to reiterate something I've said already, and that is that the whole purpose of life is for evolution. And I'm not talking about Darwinian evolution. I'm talking about upgrading ourselves by our own efforts, spiritually and otherwise. And that's the only thing you have to remember. Anything which interferes with that process is, by definition, evil. Remember that.
Yes. Well, Jim, those are great words, great thoughts to mull over the weekend. I want to wish you a great weekend. I look forward to your appearance on Evident Footprints next week on Friday night or Saturday, depending on where you are in the world. Talking to the listeners now, I know where you are. It'll be Friday for you. So you have a great weekend.
Well, thank you, Don. I wish you the same.
Thank you. Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, and our special guest, my co-host on Friday nights, resident science advisor, Jim Murray. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and BlogTalkRadio.com for carrying Evident Footprints. Also like to thank Seth Hendrick, Don Newsom on the sound, of course, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me again next Monday when my special guest will be Dr. A. Truat. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.